Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 358 of the Roguecast, recorded December 7th, 2021. James Bond Jr. returns.
We're back. We skipped, I think, a week, maybe two?
Two weeks.
So, what happened? Well, the first time we skipped, it was just because I think we were busy.
Do people remember their Bible?
Yes.
Do you remember what happened when humanity was condemned and God flooded the world?
Are you saying we're Noah?
I'm saying God thought that this was a store of degenerates.
Yes. And he's right.
And he tried to flood us out by apparently attacking the water heater of our next door neighbors and flooding their store and ours.
Yeah, we came in on Black Friday to find that their store had a couple new lagoons.
Yes.
And was flooded throughout.
Yes. You could walk anywhere you wanted and hear spongy, splashy sounds.
Yeah, it's great. So that took about a week to dry up. And during that time, we had giant fans running, including in the office. So there was literally impossible to podcast.
It's pretty awful. That said, much thanks to all the customers. Even on Black Friday, we were able to struggle and get open within that first hour.
Yep.
And people braved the pools of water.
Yep.
And did us a solid and helped us. You know, we were able to panickedly ring them up on the Square credit card reader.
Yep.
With our phones, and we found workarounds until we got the computer up and running. So it was a very nerve-wracking time. Now that we're past it, I can look back and say that they did help us a lot.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
people were pretty chill about, like, the 80 fans that we had drowning out all sound.
Yeah,
for
it was
a few days.
It was not a fun week for the rest of us. We were all going insane with all that noise.
Yeah.
It's nice to be back.
I hate it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm happy... One of the things I'm happiest about, which I thought was going to be a problem, I thought the store was going to smell like all gross and musty. Yeah. And like dank.
Well, that's what the humidifiers do.
The dehumidifiers did their freaking job. Yeah.
Anyway,
it is like, you wouldn't know.
SurfPro helped us out a lot. If you ever have a flood, I recommend them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we are back to recording, and we have a bunch of games to talk about. We're going to skip a lot of the news, because it's not like there's one big one that we're going to talk about, but we'll probably put that off. We've got 2 weeks of comics to talk about. And if we have time, we might talk about some movies that we mean to talk about for literally weeks.
Yep.
We may or may not. It depends on how long we go. So let's jump in. I want to mention that I don't know if I got a chance to talk about my return from BGGCon. I don't think I did.
You did not.
So I grabbed us some games, and then we got a big restock. And so there's a bunch of games just in time for the holidays that I would recommend. There's a game, Role Player Adventures, which is the using a dice-based building character game. This is their, like, campaign game. It's a big, giant box.
I've played it.
Have you?
Yeah. Oh. I played two game sessions of it.
And?
It's really good.
Okay.
It has a true kind of RPG quality where you are making decisions as you move around on the map.
Yeah.
The characters, you know, there's cool battles. You use cards to manipulate dice.
Okay.
That, like, if you have, like, a mace, it may allow a die to shift up or down a number or change color or
yeah,
whatever.
Okay.
You'll have spells and other things that do this. And essentially, you are trying to create sort of dice pools and knock out stuff. There's so many dice games, and I don't know which one to compare it to because I haven't played that many of them. But it actually reminded me a little bit of some of the mechanics in the Star Trek 5-Year Mission.
Okay.
And some of the other ones like that. But I think it's gonna be very approachable. It's the actual mechanics of the dice changing are fun.
Yeah.
And like I remember, I was playing this with my brother, and there was like an ooze we were fighting, and we did not have a lot of weapons or gear that manipulated the black dice in particular.
Yeah.
And that needed one to kill it, and we could not beat this thing because we...
Yeah.
But there's things like... there was at least the possibility, because there's things that can change the color of dice, and there's all sorts of neat ways to do the stuff. But it's also got a good story, I think, and solid writing on it, beautiful maps.
Yeah.
Definitely recommend it. we are not importing characters from the role player adventure,
or
like the role player game, but you can.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, but it comes with a bunch of, you know, like it has like, I think, 12 at least characters of its own. Yeah, and they're cool pre-gens.
So yeah, this is really cool. I really love role player, which is basically a dice drafting game where you build characters and you can bring them into this. It's one of these big giant games that you can wrap under the tree and it'll be like a big giant thing. So
yeah,
it is a cool game. We have the expansion as well. We also got, if you're looking for big under the tree things, we got the Yawning Portal.
Right. Portal is a it's a miniatures terrain.
The famous inn that has like a dungeon underneath it.
Right. Is that the one that's in Undermountain?
I don't think so.
Is it not? Okay. I'll have to take a look. I was thinking that there was one that was like has the it covers the entrance to Undermountain and also like has portals to other places.
It could be. I don't know.
But any, in any case, it is a beautiful sculpt. It is expensive.
It comes with a ton of like finishers of like
but,
tables and all that kind of stuff. And you can buy extra table packs and all that kind of stuff. And there's a Friendly Faces pack that also has all the NPCs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What is, what's the thing from Ferris Bueller? If you have the means, I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Also, we got the Transformers deck building game in.
Yes.
We should be getting the G.I. Joe deck building game. There was a, some issues with our warehouse. We haven't gotten those yet, but that should be coming in. We got those Roll and Play books, which are little D&D, like spiral-bound D&D books full of ideas for your if you're a DM of, like, names and places and that kind of stuff. And if you're a player, there's, like, backgrounds and character concepts, and it's like a really good sort of good stuff to kind of develop backgrounds. Like, and you have a bunch of tables if you like if you're playing and you need a name for something or you need a tavern or something like that. So those are both really cool if you for the DM in your life. We also got the Strixhaven D&D book just in today, which we actually for a rarely in a rare case have the alt cover right now.
Yeah, if you race in quickly within hearing this, we may have it or call us.
Yep.
Strixhaven being, it's from Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, it's a setting. It's sort of their Harry Potter setting.
Right, it's like a D&D Harry Potter school, and it has lots of cool animal creatures. And
you can play an owl person.
You can play an owl person. The hooks and stuff in it look really fun. The art looks great. I'm excited to kind of flip through this one. Brandy, did you mention the calendar thing?
Not yet. I was going to mention we got a couple of Kickstarter things we got in. One was the quest calendar, which is it's basically a daily calendar, and it's a D&D...
kind of like a solo RPG,
it's
right?
It's basically a play your own, choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
But it's got dice, so like you use dice with it. There's also a character book, and it's, you know, like you'll pull up a day, and it's like, oh, there's a monster. Oh, here's a map. It's,
that's pretty cool.
It's very cool. And so if you know someone who likes the idea of D&D but doesn't have a group, or you know, especially if you have younger kids, I think, this would be perfect for sort of like a teenager that kind of thing. We got a couple of those left. They may be gone by the time you hear this podcast. We only got a half dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the Pride dice.
Yeah, that was these went over so well that like it seems like within an hour, half of them were gone.
Half of them are gone. But there are some metal dice. There are some plastic. We still have all the plastic dice. There's a rainbow, and then there's, of course, there's ace and pansexual and bisexual and trans
right.
and all that kind of those all those flags and those colors.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think they did a great job with them.
They're really nice.
Then
I've got a few things that are just like restocks and stuff that I discovered at BGG. Micro Macro Crime City, which we have that in the standalone expansion. It is basically Where's Waldo, but with murder. It's this big, giant, black and white map, and there's like 18 cases that you take cards, and you have to try and find what happened.
Yeah, you'll find yourself kind of like using what... There's a magnifying glass,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Where you'll kind of like look for like some obvious clue that's like, you know, that starts the case. Am I right?
So like the one I played, it started with like... someone has been crushed by a piano.
Yeah.
So you like you go and find a place on the street where there's a drawn in, there's a guy who's been crushed by a piano.
Something that might be somewhat easy to find initially.
Right.
Although this thing is crazy detailed.
And then they're like, we think it might not have been an accident. Can you find a clue that might... And so you look up and you find a clue to why, oh, this wasn't an accident. Oh, who might have killed him? And you start to look around at the various parts, and it's very fun. You can play with like four people at a time and kind of like look at the map. One person uses the magnifying glass, the other people looking for clues.
Yeah, that's super. That's fun, and there's like I can't think of anything else like it other than Where's Waldo. But this finally puts a game construct to that.
I really enjoyed it. It's one of those things that again, if you're having family in for holidays and you want something to do, this you can play it in like 15-20 minutes, and everybody gets it. It's not like you don't have to explain the rules. You're just like, oh, look at this map and help us find this stuff.
So if I roll a 7, I can move the robber. But yeah.
We also got a restock on a couple notable things. The Mind Extreme, which is a small card game, which is really popular. This is Pandasaurus Games. They make that game. And they also make Dinosaur Island Roar and Write, which I played, which is basically you have little sheets, kind of like in Yahtzee, but it's like you're drawing maps of a dinosaur park. And as you roll dice, you put down things like you can put down concession stands, or you can put down, you can build new dinosaurs. And part of the deal is that when you have bad rolls, enough bad rolls, bad things happen, and you measure in how many people died, and you lose those points.
So Jurassic Park the game.
It's Jurassic Park the game, but it's a rolling and writing game. And
nice.
It was super fun. I had a blast playing it, so I would highly recommend that one as well. I think that's everything on my list of game stuff. It's not everything we've gotten, but it's a pretty decent overview.
We're pretty well stocked with new stuff.
Yeah, a lot of new stuff. Would highly recommend just stopping by and browsing the new game section. And also, of course, some of these have migrated to the end caps in the back or just been restocked. Basically, it's nice to have some really cool holiday options.
And we will be seeing a restock of some pretty popular graphic novels as well soon.
Should be next week or the right after. I think the 14th or 15th, we should be getting Civil War, House of M,
Planet Hulk, Infinity Gauntlet
all back in.
Which are all fairly important Marvel properties that have had some aspect of them in the MCU.
And some of them have been out of print for like a year.
So if you if you're seeking some comics,
a lot of them we have a bunch now, but we're kind of surefire wins.
Yes.
Like you're not going to go wrong with it. And it's nice to have that stuff. Like I know that there's so many supply chain issues everywhere, and we're dealing with it too. But it's nice to have a lot of these cool games and notable graphic novels coming back in.
So let's segue into talking about the one bit of news that I definitely wanted to hit this week, and that is that they put the Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse trailer out.
And I forgot to watch it.
Did you not watch it?
I didn't watch it.
Oh my god. We're going to pause and Nixon watch the trailer. All right, we're back, and now Nick has watched the trailer.
I have watched the trailer.
I've watched it for the third time.
I've watched it now for the second time. And I should say, I am probably the least fanish about the Spider-Verse stuff. I liked it, but it was a little too... The comedy was a little too comedy for me. A little too cartoony.
I love it so much, it makes me hate Venom less.
Wow. But I like this trailer quite a bit, which is largely just a scene, which is probably one of the very early opening scenes.
Well, and it's a scene that's basically continued from the very end of the first movie.
Nick, before we say anything else, did you enjoy it or not?
Yeah. No, I...
Or were you like, what about
this crap? Spider-Verse is one of those movies that was kind of jaw-dropping when you saw it in theaters.
Yeah.
Just the big screen, the animation style, it was like a living, breathing comic book in a lot of ways.
Yep.
It was
funny and goofy, but it wasn't like, it didn't lack in heart.
No.
Like, it wasn't just funny and goofy.
For sure.
And, it introduced us to Ghost Spider or Spider-Gwen or whatever.
A lot of people to Miles.
Yeah.
Miles, Spider-Ham, Nicolas Cage got to be Spider-Noir. Right.
And we don't know who all will return for this one, but in this one we do know that Gwen and Miles are certainly the center of it.
Yeah. Well, the title is Across the Spider-Verse, I assume they are going to go to all these different... realities.
Well, they show him...
They have good chemistry...
Yeah.
You're talking about just what we see in the trailer?
Yeah, well, they go through a portal that seems like maybe Gwen has access to the portal technology now that was part of the Spider-Verse in the comics.
Yeah.
That they had the web of life or whatever, and they're using this portal technology, but then Miles is like, it almost feels the way Spider-Man 29 like comes out of nowhere, grabs him, and like takes him into a portal.
Yeah.
And it almost felt like, I was like, you know, they talk at the end of Spider-Verse, Oscar Isaacs, Spider-Man 2099, is talking to his AI assistant, Lila.
Yep.
And she's like, well, you know, the multiverse was almost destroyed. And so I'm wondering if basically the idea that Miles and Gwen are not responsible enough to have this technology, and he's basically stepping in to be like, hey, you guys got to stop using these portals.
Maybe.
Because he does come out of nowhere and like grabs him in midair.
Yeah, but I mean...
Is he like, you doing this is making Alchemax more of a problem, or you're setting up something that they're going to take advantage of.
Yeah.
And that way he can kind of do the team up with him later.
Oh, I think he will. I think it won't be like a, he's got to shut him down, he's a bad guy. I think it'll be more of a like a, hey guys, this, because Spider-Man 29 has the portal technology.
Right.
They showed that at the end of Spider-Man.
That's it. Seeing him tangle with Spider-Man 2099.
I love the fact that a lot of these people are doing double duty in the MCU. We've got Hayley Stanfield, who voices Spider-Gwen, is now
Kate
Bishop. And Oscar Isaac, who is Spider-Man 29, is also Moon Knight.
Is also Moon Knight. And I'm sure Shameik Moore, who is Miles Morales, will get some gig somewhere.
Yeah, I hope so.
Maybe he'll play Miles. He's too old to play Miles in the universe in live action. But maybe he can play his dad in live action. I don't know.
But also, just liked the banter that recalls the early banter between Miles and Gwen in the first movie, as she comes in to pick him up, and like he's got this awkward, slightly kiddie room that he's trying to cover up, and he can't go with her to Portal Land or whatever because he's grounded. And she's like, "Is Spider-Man grounded?"
I don't know if I noticed or not. Are the Lord still involved?
I don't know. I didn't see the credits on there.
I didn't see him in credits.
Lord Miller, if they're involved...
Or Lord and Miller.
I hope so.
Yeah, they brought something to the table that I think it needed.
Well, and I don't trust Sony with Spider-Man, so...
Why?
It's only the people that
are... Why would you not trust Sony, who has made 12 Spider-Man movies and only three of them are going to be...
Arguably two of them are good.
I will agree with that statement, though many people will say the first Tobey Maguire and the second Tobey Maguire
are... People will say things.
I know Dave is a big fan of those.
I'm not...
Are you a fan of the first one?
I'm not
right?
even going to try and talk to Randy about this. He's just trolling.
It's true. I just don't have the fondness everybody else does. I understand that they were keystones for
all. I kind of really want to revisit the Andrew Garfield for some weird reason.
I don't think you do.
No. Well, I will probably before the new movie hits because I just want to know what they're making references and nods to.
Right.
So I'm considering watching Spider-Man 3. Because it showed up on my Facebook feed.
I actually think Spider-Man 3 is pretty rewatchable. It's just messy.
They showed, it was like a little, some of them put together a little 7-minute like thing, and it was like one of these promo things, and it was like, it showed the sequence of him doing his dancey thing on the street.
Yeah.
And I found that kind of funny. Because I know it's there, like I'm not gonna be embarrassed, but now at this point it's become camp.
Yeah.
It's become something.
I saw it in theaters by myself.
Yeah, and that's a different experience.
And that was like, what the hell is this?
I've seen it fairly recently. I actually found it very watchable. It's just super messy. It's uneven. You can tell there's too many things put together. But individual scenes are very watchable.
Well, they showed the fight with him and Flint Marco, and it looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, the effects were good.
And what's his name, I think, does a good job as
Thomas
Flint Marco.
Hayden Church was a good casting. So, I may give that a watch. I may not. We'll see. I'm in the middle of watching a lot of Christmas stuff right now.
Yeah, I think I've exclusively watched Christmas movies.
But anyway, beyond my trolling all the Spider-Man fans, yes, I greatly enjoyed this trailer. I do love the bit where she's like, is Spider-Man grounded? And then she like gives like the cocked eyes.
Yeah.
She's in a mask. Like, that's something that you really want with animation is like...
Yeah. Kind of like how they did Batman the Animated Series, gave him the expressive eyes.
Yeah. Very cool. So, yeah. So that's our news and everything. So we're going to jump right over and talk about comics for the last 2 weeks, for December 1st, December 8th. And there's a bunch of stuff.
What week do you want to start with?
So let's just jump around a little bit.
Okay.
So let's talk about this week's big book, which I think is Devil's Reign number 1.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I agree. That would have been my pick of the week of what I read.
I had two potential picks, but that Devil's Reign is definitely number 1.
It's high up on mine, too. I really like... I mean, this is... Chip Zdarsky's Daredevil ended with a thing where the Kingpin... has gotten married to Typhoid Mary.
Yep.
Daredevil,
that's who his wife is.
Yeah. Yep. Daredevil has done this thing. He was talking with Elektra, who is now his partner. They're both Daredevils at this point.
Yeah.
And he was saying, I've tried so many times. He's like, maybe if Fisk is happy, maybe that will be the thing that finally takes him off the board.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's hoping that him getting married and all that stuff will lead him to being happy. However...
Howard, that does not work out.
Well, because the thing that happened is, at the post... Wade era, and I think maybe even Charles Soule did this. Or maybe it was the tail end of Wade's run. Basically, Daredevil used Zebediah Kilgrave's children, the Purple Men, Purple Kids, to erase his knowledge of identity from the world. And at the end of Zdarsky's run, he sort of explains this, basically, that even people who knew, if they look at a piece of paper where they wrote down his name, they won't register it. Like, it's almost magic. Like, people will not know Daredevil's identity.
Right.
And so Kingpin looks at this file that has Daredevil's identity, and he can't read it, and it drives him crazy.
Right.
And he basically decides
to take
down...
Have we said yet that he's mayor of New York?
So he's mayor of New York. He's been mayor of New York for a while now.
Yeah.
And because of the Strong Ones, which are the Zdarsky's characters, who are sort of like these...
They're the Koch brothers.
Yeah, they're the Koch brothers.
They're a husband and wife, I think, but they're the Koch brothers.
Yeah, they are like the money behind the scenes, the toy men who control everything. Yep. They're wanting to elevate Fisk even further.
Yeah, so Fisk decides basically to do a very localized in New York Superhuman Registration Act. Basically, if you have superpowers, he's got his new team of Thunderbolts they're all like ex-criminals.
Yep.
Will track you down and throw you in jail. Whether you're Captain America or
Spider-Man.
And
they're going after some pretty big players.
Yeah. And kind of cool ways. Now, we've seen these kind of stories before. Civil War had these kind of things going on.
Yeah.
I would argue that Zdarsky's writing is much better than Civil War's.
I will not argue with you.
I'm going to make a pretty bold statement in saying that where Tom Taylor exceeds at writing DC characters, Zdarsky is Marvel's best writer for Marvel characters.
I don't disagree with you. Zdarsky is killing it right now.
He just has a handle on... Because there's a lot of superheroes that show up in here.
Yeah. But, like, Luke Cage gets a pretty good scene. Yeah.
And that
the
felt
FF,
like...
Oh, Ben Grimm gets a dope scene.
Yeah, Captain America gets a really good scene with Spidey.
He's definitely, like... this is a Cap who feels like Cap to me.
But even the villains, I mean, Otto feels like Otto. Yeah. I mean, that is kind of what he would do.
Yeah.
And
there's a fun scene with the Shocker in it. Who cool looking costume, by the way. They drew very cool.
They give him a Thunderbolts update.
Also, Marco Cicchetto, man.
Oh, that art is great.
He is just, like, getting better and better.
The scene where you see, like, a bunch of Thunderbolts looking to take down Moon Knight, and he's just going up against them with, like, the madman he is.
Yes. Yep, yep.
Is a great, just a splash page kind of thing.
U.S. Agent makes a fun little, probably a bunch of other names.
Yeah, U.S. Agent is the leader of the Thunderbolts. That comes from this ties into the King in Black Thunderbolts series.
Yeah.
But this is a really good first. By the way, I should say, we unfortunately ordered a little low on this because we based on Daredevil numbers, and it's ordering's hard right now.
It is.
So if you want it, you probably want to email us and drop a copy, drop in your file.
I am going to throw out a weird thing, though. Can Matt just stop with the stubble and the beard? It looks really weird in the Daredevil costume.
It is weird. He had a full-on beard in the final Daredevil.
Yeah, he did. And I was like, I showed it to Dave, and I was like, this doesn't work for me.
Yeah, you're only allowed to do that when you, if it's been like a month of insanity, and you're the hero's at the brink of madness.
It was. That's what happened.
All right, that's allowed.
Yeah, but he still has it.
Yeah, shave that, Matt.
No, now he's got stubble because he's busy. He's busy fighting.
You can't go to court in that, you hippie.
I also want to say that I love Elektra's costume. That costume is just awesome.
Yeah, their Daredevil is a great costume.
It weirds me out a little bit. I can't quite figure why.
I also love that they're partners now. Yeah. I want Matt to be in a good relationship.
I don't know how good it is. She is a psychotic killer.
But it works for him. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the psychotic killer, because I wouldn't want to say anything to her.
Nick's such a romantic that he can let go of the international assassin.
Can we talk about my other... The thing tied for it? So, the rival book is Batman 118. James Tynion is done with his Batman run.
And he went out strong. Like, Fear State was a really good finale.
And Kevin Williamson, the writer...
Not Kevin Williamson.
Or Joshua Williamson, sorry. Not Kevin Williamson, the writer of Scream.
Joshua Williamson, who has been doing, among other things, Robin, that we all really like.
Robin, he's worked on Flash, is taking over and sort of doing a new status quo with, I guess, the same... No, same
I
artist.
Like, I feel like it's the same artist.
Jorge Molina.
Yeah, and it's one of the artists.
Well, it's super good.
Jorge Molina, and then on, like, the backup, is it Mikkel Janin, who does, like, the last page?
It's really nice.
Sets up a new status quo and kind of throws Batman up against, like, a kind of small foe.
Yeah.
But the way it's done is really, really well. I like the back and forth between Oracle and him. I just felt like all the characters were kind of hitting a 10 on a 10 of scale of, like, character and fun.
I also think that one of the things that when you change creators, I worry, because Tinian's run was really good, and he left it, and he put a period on his ending. And I like that Williamson picks up and doesn't just ignore everything that's gone before.
Yeah.
He is building on the Unsanity Collective and Poison Ivy and the stuff with Oracle and all the stuff that happened. Like, he is building all of
and
that.
And sort of, like, towards the end, he's building off of Morrison's run.
I was going to say, he references something from Morrison's run, which was a really cool thing that I wasn't sure if was going to get referenced again much.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what they do with that.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. It's one of those Batman stories I think is instantly just kind of get in, and you don't really need to know anything.
Yeah.
It's easy, reader-friendly. And
there's a bit, I think we can say, he has to at one point infiltrate this ball where everyone is dressed as the villains of Gotham.
Yeah.
So it's like there's like multiple Jokers, multiple Riddlers, multiple Catwomen, and all
Williamson
that.
But the way Williamson handles that in the sense that Batman can spot the people who are actually
the villains.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is such a cool idea.
Yeah. Also, there's one little gag with the kid dressed up as Punchline that killed me.
Yeah.
I'm not like Joshua Williamson. I think I've liked Robin. I didn't really like his Flash run. It was okay when I read it. This feels like he's found his speed. I think with that and Robin, it feels like the Bat Universe has ended up being a good fit for him.
Yeah.
And when it's coupled with such good art, I feel like people should get in on it. Because you're just going to be like, in 3 or 4 months when it's like he's hitting it big, you're going to be like, why didn't I buy it then?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
With issue 118.
There's also another Reign that is Star Wars Crimson Reign, which is a miniseries.
What a segue.
It would have been. Nick wanted to talk about Batman. So this is Kira from Han Solo, yep. The Solo movie.
Okay.
A.K.A. Mother of Dragons, his okay. ex.
That's the actress, not the character, though, to be clear.
Yeah, people know who I'm talking about.
So she has
Mother of Crate Dragons.
Her criminal organization called the Crimson Dawn.
Yep.
This is the story of them. Just after Darth Maul has been deposed, Kira's now in charge. And basically, she is going to take on the Empire, or take on the Sith.
That's ambitious.
In conjunction with, Black Sun?
She's one of the other big crime syndicates.
Working alongside the Black Sun Syndicate, so, yeah. It's interesting. It's a good first issue. I'm down for, crime and heists in the Star Wars universe.
Does Crimson Dawn have Darth Maul on their side?
Darth Maul was the leader. He has been deposed at this point.
Got it.
It was a good first issue.
Cool. I can't remember if you, I don't know if you said this, but isn't this kind of like an informal sequel or maybe a formal sequel to War of the Bounty Hunters?
It spins out of War of the Bounty Hunters, but I don't get any impression that you ever read War of the Bounty Hunters.
Right. I think I just, heard it was kind of a thematic follow-up or something. Yeah.
If you were following it, this is the next step.
Yep.
Giant-Sized Black Cat wraps up Black Cat's run after basically 2 relaunched series. This is Jed McKay's...
probably the longest-running Black Cat series.
Yeah, and it was super good. This is basically a big heist where she's brought in 3 Infinity Gem-powered people for a goal, which we get revealed halfway through. It gives her a nice finale. So if you've been reading it, this is a good send-off for the character. There is a Star Trek The Mirror War Data one-shot.
Oh, I meant to read that, but I just didn't get around to it.
It's Data and Barclay, and they're doing something with Barclay's backstory, which... I don't know if this whole cloth invented in the Terran, because I don't know Barclay's backstory that much.
I don't really either.
But it's interesting, and it's a good little one-shot in there. Okay. They do some fun stuff. So basically Data goes with him to solve a mystery, and is doing his sort of Sherlock Holmes thing, but it's evil Data.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Even evil Data likes the Sherlock Holmesy type stuff.
Nice.
I know for us, one of the things this week is Dark Knights of Steel number 2.
Yep.
Which I thought the second issue was even stronger than the first.
This is Tom Taylor's DC Universe in a fantasy setting.
Yep.
And even though you probably have seen some version of that before or some version of Marvel doing that, most people kind of, I hate to say it, they kind of half-ass it.
Yes.
And this is a much more thoughtful version with like a kingdom ruled over by, who's Black Lightning?
Jefferson Pierce.
And, Harley Quinn recast as a court jester, Alfred as the loyal retainer to Batman, but also some things that are unexpected, like Batman and Superman aren't particularly at odds. Batman and Superman grew up together. They grew up together, yeah. So he's not afraid to, he's not just trying to recreate the familiar tropes. No. He's kind of like, oh, how might things be different? And we see some different stuff when we see, like, the Amazons in this one.
Well, he's pitting the House of El, the sort of their castle was ruled by Jor-El and Lara, and Superman's the heir apparent.
Yep.
That their kingdom basically locks up anyone with superpowers. And then Jefferson Pierce, his kingdom is basically has all the power people, and there's sort of a Cold War that heats up.
Yeah. Can we say that, I want to say who's the captain of the guard kind of person is, the military planner, is Amanda Waller.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. That's the other thing, it's like instead of just taking the icons, and at this point, by the way, she is an icon. She's been in so many different iterations of the DC Universe. But, the White Boy Club could use some diversity. Amanda Waller's always been a good character, and so it's cool to see her in the mix, too.
Well, and also he uses Constantine as, like, the court magician of Jefferson.
Yeah, he's, like, smoking a pipe, and he's got, like, a kind of a weather-beaten, like, tan cloak on. You're going to wreck. All of these characters are actually very immediately recognizable as who they are. There's also some interesting mysteries brewing. Green Man, as we were talking about earlier with Anna, who seemed like he was just Green Lantern, but they have just kept him off panel.
Yeah, we haven't seen him.
For both issues. And so I think even if he is, there's some reveal to be had. Like, it's not Hal, maybe it's something else. He was barefoot in this one. Did you notice that, Nick?
I did.
Yeah, we don't know quite what to make of it, unless the Green Man is like the Swamp Thing. That seems like a Swamp Thing kind of earth, kind of druidy thing, maybe, but... But who knows? It's one of the many kind of neat mystery set up in it. But
Dave, there's also World of Krypton number 1 this week.
Yep, I didn't get around to checking this out, but it's written by Robert Venditti, who himself wrote some Green Lantern stuff. But didn't he do? Yeah, he did Green Lantern.
Yeah,
and with art by Mike Oeming, who people may know from Bendis's Powers and things like that.
Yeah.
He also wrote. He actually closed out the Thor run when he was writing it years ago. I mean, a decade plus ago. Yeah, I haven't read it, but like you know, like if you're a fan of Superman lore, this promises to be kind of a deeper look at like pre-destruction Krypton.
Buffy the Last Slayer number one, or as we've been calling it around here, Old Woman Buffy.
Old Woman Buffy cover. This particular cover is Old Man Xander.
Yep.
But yeah, it's Buffy and Sunnydale some decades into the future.
Yeah,
and
where there's been a human vampire alliance, sort of.
Oh, interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, did you guys not read this?
Nope.
Oh, I actually thought it was quite good.
Oh.
Yeah, there's some really interesting concepts in the sense that, yeah, there's a human vampire alliance. Slayers have sort of been outlawed, and also they can't use their abilities to kill vampires because that would be a crime.
Huh.
Buffy has become, for some reason, immortal, even though she's not using. She can't die using her abilities.
Huh.
I don't know. The world building that this writer who is...
Casey Gilley,
which I'm not familiar with.
I know the name.
Is really cool because it sort of takes the Buffy mythos, but kind of puts her own spin on it, utilizing some familiar faces. I just thought it was a really good read. If you have any love for Buffy, definitely check this one out. I think it kind of does what Old Man Logan did for... in a better way, but sort of the old man or old woman Buffy as I don't know. It was really fun.
Boom also has a new book from their Boombox line called Buckhead Number One. Dave, did you make a sign for this? Do you have any idea what it's about?
Which one is it?
Buckhead?
No. I think that must have missed me.
It's like a middle school. It's like maybe there's a fantasy world involved. I didn't get a chance to read it. As always with Boom, it looks very pretty. Looks like maybe they're just playing like a online game. It may just be a middle school thing. I'm sure there's some kind of mystery to it. I don't know what the deal is, but Boom has a pretty good history with the
Google it.
Book.
There's a new team up book, Captain America and Iron Man.
Yep.
Kind of seeing some sins of Iron Man's past come back to bite him in the butt.
Yep. Has really pretty art by Angel Anzueta.
It does. It does. And I thought the story was interesting, utilizing some sort of the Avengers initiative stuff that I thought was cool.
Okay.
It was an interesting read.
I see the writer of it is Derek Landy, and that's like if your first and last name's combined, Randy. Randy Landy.
Okay.
That's what you need to
do. Good to know.
Just keep that in mind.
I will. there's another one of these Marvel Voices one-shots. This time it is focused on Hispanic characters, so... and it's by Latin and Latinx characters and creators. So Sunspot, the new Nova, Miles Morales, Ghost Rider, White Tiger,
America Chavez.
America Chavez, and Reptile are all in there. And there's a bunch of others as well. So, you know, a bunch of short stories. These are always pretty good. There's usually at least one or two that are just, like, exceptional. And they got a bunch of covers, so you can pick your favorite.
Some really good art in there as I was flipping through it.
There is another one from, I think it was Vault. Vault has Lunar Room, which is a werewolf book.
He was like a mob enforcer I think it's like sort of a more supernaturally accepted world.
Okay.
Where like she was a werewolf and mob enforcer who got out of the biz and gets pulled back in by some mage to, I think, do protection services. But it's something that has to do with her past life. I don't know a lot of the details on it, but it sounded pretty cool. And the art looked pretty dope.
Aftershock has one of their big, like, one-shot, big things called Tales of Mother F. Goose.
That's like Mother F. and Goose.
It says here, the three little pigs are gluttonous casino owners. Little Miss Muffet is a hard-nosed cop with arachnophobia. The three blind mice are ocularly impaired assassins. Puss in Boots is a feline-faced scumbag. This is not the Mother Goose you know.
The way I heard it described more closely is just like it takes the fairy tale concepts, but maps them onto like kind of like modern crime stories. No magic or anything like that.
Yeah.
They're not the actual like. There's no magical animals and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
I think it is like literally taking the idea, I don't know how you would do Three Little Pigs, but like if I had to imagine it, it means that somebody's got like three like safe houses. And, like, the pigs are, like, the guys who could be guarding the safe houses or whatever. In other words, it's all transferred into noir tropes.
So
I'm slightly disappointed because the cover has a goose on it that is emulating Scarface.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then when I flipped through it, I was like, where are all the geese?
There's no goose.
No.
There's no goose.
But the premise sounded more interesting to me when I thought about it, because I've seen plenty of fables type books.
Yeah.
The notion of just taking the premise of these and the story and names and stuff like that and revisiting them as crime stories sounds fun.
So as a broad thing, I don't like annuals. I mostly feel like they're a vestigial organ of comics that don't make any sense. Like, why are you doing these one-shot stories?
Yet in the past 2 weeks, they've produced three that have changed your mind a little bit.
Yes. So DC started doing annuals this year.
Letting Tom Taylor write them helps.
And so one of them this week is Superman Son of Kal-El, which sees John facing off with Lex Luthor in an interesting way. Very unlike the way his father approached it.
And the juxtaposition is, like, a part of the book. It's not just like, oh, this is different than how I remember it. Like, literally, he talks to his dad about how they're going to approach Luther differently.
And a few different artists come on to help out. Steve Pugh and Clayton Henry.
Yeah.
Both really
good.
But
it's all Tom Taylor writing, and it feels of a piece with the rest of the stuff. And then last week, there were three that I read. There's also two others that are probably good. But one of them is Nightwing Annual, which is Tom Taylor with some different artists doing a story of Red Hood and Nightwing, and sort of drawing the strong parallel of them being basically brothers.
Yeah, it has flashbacks to the early days when Red Hood was not Red Hood, but the Jason Robin, Todd, more disturbed Robin, and Dick Grayson, who he was like he's envious of and bitter about being compared to, comes in on a weekend like when Batman's out, and he's like, "Hey, let's go hang out." And it's kind of like the Miles Morales thing. He's, like, grounded or whatever, and he's like, Alfred's like, I'm going to look the other way.
Yeah. But also there's a modern story where it looks like the Red Hood has started murdering people again.
Right.
Isn't there, like, doesn't he ask if we could take the Batmobile? And Jason's like, never let it. And Alfred throws him the keys.
Yeah. But so there's the parallel storytelling of, like, younger Nightwing taking Damian under his wing. Or not Damian, Jason. And then older Nightwing and Red Hood. And it is sort of a continuation of the redemption of Red Hood that Jim Sadarsky did in the Batman Urban Legends trade, which is also out this week.
It's fascinating to me how well overall the Bat family has kind of gelled over the years.
Yeah.
I remember, like, I'm going to talk like 10, 15 years ago when, like, Bill Willingham did that, like, gang war thing.
Yeah.
Warzone, was that what it was called?
I don't remember.
And, like, things like everything was, like, so bleak. Like, the characters were all at odds.
Yep.
Stephanie Brown got tortured to death and all this horrible stuff. And I'm like, the Bat family can be really good if you use them, and they can be at odds.
Yeah.
And, like, that happens all the time in
but
the
But they're a family. They should ultimately come together.
Right. And now they, like, they have them pinned down so well that I feel like, you know, when Damian always adds a new element into it, Barbara and Dick each, you know, like, you know how these characters are. They're in their way as well-defined as sort of Marvel characters have traditionally been, whereas DC's have been more kind of reinterpretable. Well, the Bat family is pretty well pinned down, and I think they actually have a weird Marvel quality to them in that.
Yeah. And this one, I particularly like, they mentioned that basically, that he talks about Jason having given up using guns, going back to going through, and saying that Batman will never say it, but he's glad you did.
He's like, he's proud of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, there's a bunch of really good, thoughtful character moments like that.
As always with Tom Taylor.
It's not, it goes deeper than the idea sounds.
I feel like Red Hood could kill you just as easily with a baton than he could with a gun. So, I mean, it's
just
going to
take a little more time.
But Red Hood does say, he's like, oh, and those batons you use are like, they're like being licked by kittens. he does call them out for the violence that they do, so that's kind of funny. The Robin Annual is basically a sort of a prequel to the Robin series. It shows him getting basically learning about Lazarus Island and learning about Respawn and some of the other characters. And it's a good little annual.
It is.
And then the Joker Annual, by James Tynion and Matt Rosenberg, art by Frank Avila,
also good,
is a story of early days Gordon. Basically, as he's cleaning up the town and the Joker is doing his thing. It also features Batgirl, who Gordon clearly knows is his daughter, but they're playing the game like neither one of them knows.
And this is a Joker who, like on the surface, seems like he's kind of more of almost the 60s comedic clown Joker.
But he's still scary.
And
it does... What the Joker series has been about is basically the relationship between Gordon and the Joker, and this is a good... deepens that a little bit.
You know, I remember saying this, I don't know, about a year ago now, that the Bat family had kind of, like, the Bat books that were, like, had become really strong in DC again.
Yeah.
And that's the case. All these are all annuals are all Bat books, right?
Yep.
Except for Superman. That just had the Tom Taylor.
But you put Tom Taylor in anything, we'll read it.
Yep.
DC also had Justice League Incarnate, which is another Williamson book. It's a 5-issue. This is crazy Grant Morrison weirdness.
It's taking the characters that he introduced in, like, Final Crisis.
Yes.
President Superman, yeah. And...
And this is this is spinning off from the thing they just did, which was...
Oh, I forget.
Infinite something. I don't remember what it was.
It was Infinite Frontier.
Infinite Frontier.
Yeah, all the alternate world crossover characters, yeah. You know, it has the Black Superman. I don't remember his Kryptonian name, but...
I don't either.
But it's got him.
It's got the...
Captain Carrot is in there.
Captain Carrot. Thomas Wayne, Flashpoint Batman.
There's a Lady Aquaman. I don't know who that is.
There's Mary Marvel's in there, and then the Chinese Flash from... from that Superman line.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's a fun little team.
If you like that kind of the multiverse aspect of DC, this is probably a must read. I read that they're basically specifically protecting the multiverse from Darkseid's machinations.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah. The Last Session is a book from Mad Cave Comics, and it's basically about high school students. Half of the book is basically about these high school students, sort of, and then. We see them as they've grown up a little bit, and they're getting together to play D&D, and then we see them playing D&D.
Randy, do they name-check D&D specifically, or do they call it something else?
They call it something else.
Do they call it something else?
Yeah.
They just say gamed.
Dungeons and more Dungeons.
Yeah, so
no, it actually has a name.
Does it have a name?
It does. Oh, okay. I can't remember what it is.
But it is basically D&D.
Yes, it is basically D&D.
So basically, this is a...
Dice and Death Traps.
Okay.
I wanted to read this one, I just didn't get around to it.
It's very cute, and their D&D stuff is fun, and the new player who is, like, the DM's girlfriend, or... his girlfriend, she is, like, playing this sort of dragonkin bard. Mm-hmm. They're all playing their old characters again. They're all, like, level 17... human Hell Knight cleric, dwarven druid, half orc ranger, half elf rogue, and then this sort of innocent, naive bard who's never played the game comes in and starts sort of like trying to help out. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a really fun slice of life / D&D book.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not like they don't get sucked into a D&D world or anything. No. It's just like they're playing the game and then it just transitions and we're watching the D&D game. Super fun. If people who are liking like Critical Role and that kind of stuff should definitely give this a look. And then also there are some trades. Grendel Devil's Odyssey, the latest in Matt Wagner's Grendel, gets a hardcover collection. There's this really nice looking Umbrella Academy box set that has three Umbrella Academy trades. There is the Sonic the Hedgehog Encyclopedia.
Oh.
Which is basically an encyclopedia of Sonic and the Sonic world. Batman Urban Legends trade, which you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, that's the that if you want to read a really good modern Red Hood story with super tight artwork. That was, Chip Zdarsky's lead story in Batman Urban Legends, and they finally collected it.
And it also includes the Grifter story, was the backup story.
Yep.
And then there's a collection of X-Men from the Ashes, which is the post-Dark Phoenix X-Men.
Yeah, this is like some peak mid-80s stuff. Yeah,
it was an early Marvel trade. I want to say this came out right about the time like Tony Stark's Demon in a Bottle thing came out.
They didn't do too many trade paperbacks then, but every once in a while they collect kind of notable stories.
And this is some really good sort of classic Claremont stuff. I would definitely recommend it if you want to delve into some of the classic Claremont stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a good, affordable way to check that out. I loved this trade when I was a kid, and it's got a really good cover on it as well.
Yeah, I believe if it gets to the Dark Phoenix Return thing, that means Paul Smith art. Which I honestly think could be the high water mark of the series.
It's possible.
Byrne obviously has the claim to the throne on that, but Paul Smith's stuff is so underratedly great throughout, and it's got like the Morlock storyline stuff with the Brood, the return of Phoenix Madeline Pryor, and all that stuff. Just so good.
All right. That's comics for the week, I think. We got everything?
Yep.
So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about a couple of movies and maybe a TV show. We'll see what we have time for. Okay, so we've had a few things in our topics queue that we have not had time to get around to, and we're going to try to talk about those this week. And the first thing is the Netflix movie Red Notice, which I believe is the most streamed movie ever.
That's what they're saying.
Well, I mean, it's the most streamed movie on Netflix, but it probably would make it the most streamed movie ever.
Yeah, yeah. You would... Logic.
And it was one of their more expensive movies. And I believe this was originally going to go to theaters, and then the pandemic happened.
Yep.
Which, honestly, I feel like this probably would have been a good one in theaters. But yeah. It's probably better as, like, as I watched it on the big screen in my hotel at BGGCon. After a day of settling in and starting playing board games, it was a great little bit of escape.
Yeah, it is just a fun little action movie starring three of the bigger movie stars.
Sound like a little movie
to
me.
It's Dwayne The Rock Johnson. How long are we going to keep calling The Rock? Is it?
I think they're done. That? I think we can call him Dwayne Johnson now.
Okay, I don't know. We'll see what the press does with Black Adam.
Yeah, and then Ryan Reynolds and Gal Gadot. They play, respectively, Ryan Reynolds is a famous thief, art thief, basically.
Yeah, art thief.
Gal Gadot is, like, the biggest art thief in the world.
Yes.
And Dwayne Johnson is a customs agent, but it's something like that. He's like the
enforcer.
He's a forensics specialist or something. Yeah.
In the art field?
Works for the FBI.
Okay.
So this is this weird thing of, like, you know how Schwarzenegger would play, like, he would play like a
monetalist.
Yeah. kind of like that. Yeah. It was like, this guy's your... And they call it on me, like, you're a profiler, you should be in the field. But basically, it starts off with Dwayne Johnson working with this Interpol lady, and they're at this heist that Ryan Reynolds is pulling. There's a great chase scene, and then it looks like Ryan Reynolds has framed him for having basically stolen this Fabergé egg type thing.
Yeah.
And these three eggs together lead to some kind of treasure.
Exactly.
And so there's a red notice put out on them, I think. I don't remember what the red notice actually means.
Yeah, it's like the highest.
All you need to know is that Dwayne Johnson's character and Ryan Reynolds' character, who don't like each other, wind up in a Russian prison together and have to work together to take down Gal Gadot's character.
Yes.
And there are twists and turns. At some point, somebody fires a rocket through a helicopter.
That's true.
This is Tango and Cash, Hobbs and Shaw, dumb as hell, super fun.
Meets a little Indiana Jones flavor.
Yeah.
It's definitely Tango and Cash.
It's got a little of that National Treasure vibe to it.
It's a little bit.
Yeah. It's goofy and stupid, but in a glorious way. Like, I really enjoyed this. The chemistry between The Rock and Ryan Reynolds is, you got a taste of it in Hobbs and Shaw, and there's a lot of it here where...
Yeah.
Basically, they're on a little more even footing because Ryan Reynolds in Hobbs and Shaw is basically this guy who's just a sort of weasel analyst CIA guy. And in this one, he's like an art thief and he comes and gets over on...
Still playing a weasel, kind of.
Still playing a weasel.
That's what he does.
That's what he does. But it was really fun. These characters all have great chemistry. The plot makes no sense. If you watch the pitch meeting for it.
Okay.
They call out just how stupid the plot is. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
No, but,
it's so much fun.
Nick, did you like it as much as Randy did?
I don't think I liked it as much as Randy did. it is kind of a mess.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a fun mess because you can kind of just turn your brain off. And it's a good popcorn flick.
Yeah.
You don't have to think too much. You can laugh a little bit.
There's some fun set pieces.
And Dave is... No. There's some good set pieces. Randy's not wrong about the interplay between all the different actors. They're great together.
That, it should tell you something that I have no idea what any of their character names are.
Yeah, no. You call them Hobbs and Shaw. Character names from other things.
Yes.
Or from Hobbs
I only
and,
know that Dwayne Johnson's character and Ryan Reynolds' character. I do not know any of their
names. The Rock, Deadpool, and Wonder Woman team.
The Rock, Deadpool, and Wonder Woman.
Or fight each other or whatever.
Yeah. But anyway, it's fun, and I definitely recommend it to people. And it's
actually, I guess I should
Netflix.
Say... Black Adam, Deadpool, and Wonder Woman.
Yes,
so we get all the superheroes. Yep. Or we could say Black Adam, Green Lantern.
You want to see the same universe? Yeah. Anyway. It's funny, I almost want to go back and rewatch Green Lantern, knowing that it was terrible, but just enjoying it for Ryan Reynolds of it
now,
all.
No, Ryan Reynolds traveled back in time, and he killed himself for before he made Green Lantern. So that doesn't actually exist.
Does that happen
anymore.
In Deadpool
it
or
does.
Deadpool 2?
It does.
Okay. The other spy movie that we all three saw is a little more serious.
We all saw it separately,
yes,
right?
We all saw it separately. Although maybe not much better plotted. and that is James Bond's, the final Daniel Craig, James Bond, No Time to Die.
Right.
Are we going to delve into spoilers?
Yeah.
Because this has some pretty big spoilers. Yes.
So it just hit, you can now buy it or whatever today.
And we are going to spoil it if you haven't seen it. You probably can guess from the title, there is in fact time to die.
There is time to die. In fact... Bond dies.
He does.
Bond
dies.
Whoa, whoa. the premise of it is, I felt like, so I was disappointed in this movie. I thought it was a weak end to the series and left a sour taste in my mouth, even though it had some good scenes along the way. But I thought it was at its most potent early on when, who's the woman who he's fallen for?
It's not Anna Damaris, right? It's...
Oh, wait a minute.
Not Vesper from the original one, but the one who's the mother of his child.
The psychiatrist.
One, yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about his co-agent.
No, Anna Damaris shows up.
Who he's fallen in love with.
Yeah.
So what is her name?
I forget it. But doesn't she matter. Actually showed up in Spectre.
She did.
She's a character Spectre. From Spectre.
Yeah, yeah. And the mother of his child, who will be revealed as the movie goes on. But early on, I guess, Spectre, somebody stages it to make her look as if she's betrayed him.
Yes. Yep.
And I thought it was at its most potent in a scene where they're, like, all being ambushed in, are they, like, Rome or somewhere?
Yes, I think something like that.
And, like, these guys are approaching his car, and they're, like, shotgun blasting the chunks off of it.
Yep.
But it's, like, so bulletproof it can take a bunch of shots. And he isn't trying to get out, and he looks like he's ready to die.
Yeah.
He's like, this is the worst. And I actually, like, in that moment, I was like, okay, I get that. That's the gravitas I kind of wanted the whole movie to have, this thing.
Yeah.
But it kind of, I felt lost it after that, and it jumps ahead. I sort of like the premise. It jumps ahead. He's left a few years have passed.
He's left the service behind.
He's retired in Jamaica. I can't remember if he's taken on any sort of jobs
or
anything.
He's retired multiple times at this point.
Yeah.
But he gets pulled back into it when Felix Leiter calls him out for something, and Felix Leiter gets offed.
Yeah,
too.
Felix Leiter gets
in a lame way.
It's a lame way.
I think this is a movie that has a strong, like, first 45 minutes.
Anna de Armas as the other agent is fantastic.
Yeah.
She's a shot in the arm in the movie. Yeah. By the way, I haven't seen her in much, but she was, like, obviously great in Knives Out as the protagonist at the heart of the mystery.
We're going to see a lot more of her. She just took Scarlett Johansson's role in the Chris Evans movie actioner.
She shows up as this, like, kind of gleeful, kind of joie de vivre spy who's, like, living it up with Bond, shooting it up.
But they play her. They do this whole thing where she's like, this is my first week, I've never been trained, all this kind of stuff, which is clearly bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's super fun. That, like, she's great at the job. And
she kicks all kinds of ass in her scene.
Is it Lashana Lynch? Is that who plays?
Yep.
I thought that was disappointing, and I thought that was underwritten, because I know the actress is great.
Yeah,
but they really underwrite her.
Almost like they got cold feet, so this is the woman who has taken on the 007 number after Bond left, and there's, like, friction between them, of course, but pretty early on, she kind of establishes a level of respect for him, and he establishes a level of respect for her.
Yeah.
So there's not too much friction, actually.
No. But it's not interesting as a result. Like, I didn't care when she's finally, like, when she's cares that he gets killed, I'm like... you never earned this. Like, none of this was earned.
Right.
Which is how I feel about most of the Bond movies that Craig did. As I look through, Dave, you said, at the beginning part, you're like, this is the movie I wanted, and then they changed gears.
Yeah.
That happened for me in Casino Royale. They opened Casino Royale with this cool black and white scene of him earning his 00 license. And then they jump ahead to a parkour chase that is more like standard Bond.
Yeah.
And they never got me back.
You know, they can't seem to get away from the big set pieces in Bond. And I kind of get it. He did pioneer those set pieces, which now every movie has, but like Bond originated them, and I can see why they're like, we're not going to give this up and make him like a more realistic spy.
Yeah.
But so I sort of get it. But yeah, it's too bad that they nearly went hard-edged, and then they kind of only sort of half went hard-edged.
Well, and then the writing on all of them has been pretty weak. Like, Quantum of Solace is not great. Spectre's not great. Skyfall has a lot I like, but it has some flaws in it too.
Skyfall is the strongest.
I think Casino Royale is the strongest, and Skyfall comes next.
Well,
but
think,
they're both quite good.
I think all of them are about 45 minutes too long.
That's
and I
true.
Also think if they knew they were going to do this, and maybe they didn't.
Bond movies need to get lean again.
They started out with him being. I was talking with some friends about this. They started out with him just having gotten his 00. And then by the second movie they've made with him, he's already tired of being Bond. He's retired in several of these movies. And I'm like, you spent more time with him not being 007 than him being 007.
Yeah, I guess that they might have done that because, A, Craig was like a little older when he started than I think some of the other Bonds have been. And also, to some degree, I guess, like, fandom has, like... Well, I guess we really haven't seen an untried Bond before. Like, that would have been a place to go if they wanted
to. I was saying, their arc here
James
of,
Bond
like,
Jr., consider it.
Their arc of Bond from new agent to embittered agent to retired agent to death. Like, there's an arc, and dealing with Spectre, like, there's an arc to all of that, but they were trying to make it all fit, and you could tell that they're fitting together these stories that weren't planned to be together.
You know what's funny is they did the best they could in Spectre, and maybe the, yeah, I guess Spectre, by saying that, like, okay, all of the events that have been going on in these previous movies, well, they're all Spectre. Tendrils of Spectre, and I was like, and then Spectre gets taken down in, like, about, like, 20 minutes into this movie by a lame villain played by...
Oh, Mr. Robot.
Oh, yeah.
That guy, Freddie Mercury.
Yeah. Him. I don't remember his name.
Anyway.
Rami Malek.
He's not... I don't think there's, like, an innate problem with him, but he doesn't... Like, his character is underwritten time.
It's the same with all of the Daniel Craig's villains, is they're all underwritten. They're all kind of bland.
Yeah. You know, Javier Bardem's bad guy in Skyfall was pretty damn good.
Yeah. He was alright, but even then, I think they could have deepened.
He had a good one.
But he had a great entrance.
Casino Royale's villain, sort of villain, with Lashif. Hannibal, which I can't remember. Why can I not remember his
Mads
name?
Mads Mikkelsen.
Those were good. But that was like, those are two amazing actors.
Yeah. Right.
They screwed up with Blofeld because...
Yeah, they did.
Christoph Waltz is a great actor. He can choose some scenery.
And they also failed to give him anything. Like, he appears in this, but like they didn't give him cool stuff to do in this either.
Well, but he got to sit in a Magneto chair and then die.
He didn't get to do cool stuff in Spectre either.
Yeah, I think I heard that one was particularly a victim of a writer's strike or something that had gone on, and it feels like it.
I mean, here's the thing. You look at, and I know this is a high bar to hold it to, but it's Bond. I feel like you can hold it to a high bar. You look at the MCU, and when they do movies, they look back at what has gone before, and then they write to it in such a way that it feels like it's been planned all along. There's no way they planned all that stuff in the MCU. They are working from what they had and drawing those threads together. Bond could have done the same thing and should have done the same thing, but it feels like lazy writing where they didn't do it.
Bond is a character I think that like they are always he is a bit of a Cold War relic. He's sexist and all of that stuff too. And I think there's multiple there's like forces like writing these movies that are trying to be more progressive.
Yeah.
There's forces that are trying to hold on to the regressive stuff.
And
there's somebody who wants to be big budget. There's some people who wants it to be hardcore and smaller. Yeah. And I think they're always fighting. And it like it's making for some sort of uneven movies.
I think that's you're right.
I've mostly enjoyed the ride. I was definitely disappointed in the ending. I'll rewatch it at some point, but like I'm not going to be in any hurry to. But it's not without some good moments.
Oh yeah, I mean, I can trash talk this movie. I actually thought it was one of the better ones that I've enjoyed. I think I liked it more than you did, Dave. And I do think, in looking back, like Casino Royale is the one I've watched a few times over and over again. I think I've seen Skyfall twice. I've never gone back to rewatch Spectre or Quantum of Solace. And then this one is one... I think if I was ranking them, I'd put Casino Royale at the top, then Skyfall, then this one, and then Spectre, and then Quantum of Solace.
I'd at least start with the same top two. I'd have to think a little bit about the other ones.
I've never revisited Spectre. I saw it in theaters. And yeah,
I revisited it recently, and it was still I was actually kind of thinking I'd like it more, but I for some reason I liked it pretty decently when I saw it in the theater, even given some disappointment. It dropped in my esteem when I
all the movies have bits that I like.
Yeah, they all have bits.
I like the characters. I like Ralph Fiennes as M. I like their Q.
Yeah.
I
feel like there's a bit of there are some movies that like if you just turn it off half an hour before it ends, you're going to enjoy the movie more. this one is like I feel like if you cut this off right at the end of that sequence at the very beginning, right after him and Ana de Armas do their thing.
Yeah.
If you turn the movie off right then, this is a pretty solid James Bond
movie. This is like...
So Spectre dies, he wins.
Spectre dies, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He meets a new friend.
This is how I watch Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. I watch until the aliens rise up and start attacking, and then I'm like, it's all done. They attack the Earth and win.
And win. Yeah, this is one of those...
You don't want to see Redding and Tim Robbins in a...
Nope. I'm going to quick say two other things I disliked about this movie.
Yeah.
One was the John Wick knockoff shootouts at the end where Bond just goes around just killing dude after dude after dude. Very bloodlessly in a kind of weird way that like it felt like it was meant to be violent, but it also felt like he wasn't really in danger.
Yeah.
He was just killing dude after dude. They just... I don't know. It's just boring.
Well, John Wick shootouts are interesting and they're well done.
Yeah, they're much more thoughtful and choreographed and energetic.
This one felt like kind of a Bargain Basement Tom Clancy.
It did.
Yeah.
And then I was bummed too that like I didn't particularly feel much going on emotionally when he died. I know some people did.
I didn't either.
I was not that person. And then I was particularly annoyed that they busted out the song All the Time in the World, great song from Louis Armstrong, but that was played famously in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, I think, when Bond gets married at the end of it, and Spectre agents kill his wife while they're driving. They do a drive-by, and that song plays over Bond and the credits in his grim resolve at the end. So it has already been done for Bond. It's essentially a, hey, remember how you felt sad this time, you know, 40 years ago? How about feeling sad again for us now?
Well, and then we see a movie with Bond dying, and then at the end of the credits it says Bond will return.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's a little weird. It's a little strange.
That's because the thing, they always say James Bond will return.
Oh, yeah, no. But I mean, even after this fact, the Broccoli family's come out and said Bond is coming back in the next one. So they're just going to start over.
I want them to do three movies in a row where they turn loose that are standalones, each of them, with different directors who get to do whatever they want. If somebody wants to play it campy, like borderline Austin Powers and re-embrace, I would say do that one like that. That's very Roger Moore-y.
I want to see a period piece in the 60s where he belongs.
Oh, that'd be dope. Yeah. I also want to see one that goes ahead and at least do for a one-shot a thing where Bond is a title, and he's like, you see the guy who's like the fifth Bond or something like that. And, or find out that, like, MI6 has been manipulating them all along and, you know, setting up childhood accidents and all that stuff.
Yeah. Kind of this they alluded to but never actually set out right
in
Skyfall.
They didn't quite want to do it in Skyfall.
And then, of course, an animated one where James Bond is a badger.
Actually, I want James Bond Jr. Returns. Do you remember that wasn't really a thing?
It was a thing.
A cartoon. Yep.
And had a toy line, too.
Yep.
Yes.
Anyway, Nick, what was your overall take on it? Did you enjoy it? Did you feel for it when Bond got croaked?
I don't know if I'd say I felt for it. I thought
were
some
the tears
of,
gushing down your face?
There were not.
Tidal wave of
like I said, it's got a strong first 45 minutes up until the Ana de Armas stuff. The Felix Leiter stuff sucked.
Yeah,
I think the chase stuff in the snow was pretty cool. Yeah. Like there were some good bits in
and
there.
And then towards the end, it had elements. I actually thought the chase scene with when they're in the car and with his kid and his good, and I was like, oh,
sometimes
they're flipping things.
Like happens in a lot of Bond movies, I wasn't quite clear on motivations and like why they were, why the chase was happening as it was. And
a lot of my enjoyment derives from the fact that I like Daniel Craig, and I enjoy his delivery and character.
Daniel
bits.
Craig, you mean Benoit Blanc?
I do, because I can't wait. Because
that
Knives
is the
out.
Future of Daniel Craig.
Yeah, I'm way more excited for more Benoit Blanc than I am more James Bond. So. Yeah.
Well, and I think he is,
Knives
too.
Out is better than any of the Bond movies with Daniel Craig.
Yeah, not even close.
I think he was ready to... I don't know why he came back for this. I guess he felt like he...
Or he had a contract.
I mean, yeah,
or he had a contract.
He was right to wrap it up.
Yeah.
It's just too bad that, like, there were some good writers on this, and yet the script felt lackluster in most areas.
Because wasn't one of the writers on this...
It was, it was the woman from Fleabag.
Yeah.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and she's great.
Yeah.
Like, it should have worked, but I think...
Is she not an action movie writer, or...
I think she probably... The stuff that I like probably came from her. It's a Too Many Cooks situation.
Yeah.
And we know the Broccolis are famously hands-on.
Oh, yeah. They're...
And they've been running this thing for
when
decades.
When they're gone, is it going to be like when Dan DiDio's Death Grip was pulled from DC, and suddenly
we
get all these great books from DC again?
I think it's entirely possible. Yes.
I don't think we'll ever see the Broccoli family relinquish the Bond.
Maybe they'll all die. Maybe they'll be killed in the Spectre type fashion.
Maybe some stupid DNA targeting poison
that never makes any real sense. Yeah,
whatever.
One last thing to talk about, and that is Cowboy Bebop, not the anime, but the live action.
Yeah, that's been the subject of some controversy, but I think a little bit of it may be a tempest in a teapot, or like, I know some anime fans are not feeling it, but like, most of the people I've talked to have liked it.
It turns out that some anime fans don't like live action anime.
Yeah.
I kind of hit pretty hard on the review stuff.
Well, I will say I get it. There's obviously been a lot of like screw ups. What were the big ones?
Aeon Flux,
Death
Ghost
Note,
in the Shell.
Like
Death
Note, Ghost in the Shell. Here's the thing, I haven't seen any of these. I didn't see Aeon Flux, it was fine. I think, to some extent, anime fans want a direct translation and nothing else will satisfy. And I get it. They feel about this the way I feel about, say, Venom. Although there was no version of Venom I was going to be super happy to see.
I think the people who are behind the scenes on this, who are running it, have the spirit of Cowboy Bebop.
I agree. It's Josh Applebaum and Andre Nemec, who are involved in, among other things, Alias, the Mission Impossible movies.
But also Christopher Yost.
Christopher Yost from Marvel.
Javier Grillo Marx.
Javier Grillo Mark Watch, who did, among other things, Middleman. The Middleman feels very of a piece with Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
So one of your friends on Facebook described it as kind of like a more up-tempo, futuristic Sin City.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good way to describe its kind of living cartoon quality.
Yep.
So, you know, people, I think, kind of know the basic premise. These are futuristic bounty hunters that are called cowboys.
Cowboys. Yep.
Bebop is the ship, right?
The ship is called Bebop.
Yep. And you got a trio of three of them, Spike Spiegel, Jet Black.
Faye Valentine.
And Ayn. A very fun, a colorful group that's always fun to just watch talk. And I think the live actors really brought something out.
Every one of these people was great. Like John Cho kills it as Spike.
Yep.
The guy playing Jet Black is great. Faye Valentine was my favorite. Like, they really got these
guys.
Well,
and they really beefed up Faye Valentine's backstory to a point where I feel like she was a better character in this.
Also, she wears clothes, which is not as true in the anime.
It's true. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have not seen the anime other than bits and pieces. Anime fans out there that are freaking out, don't sweat it. I am going to watch it after this. It's just going to be an interesting inversion of the usual order that people would watch it in.
I went and
I think I'm going to probably enjoy it.
I rewatched six of them while I was waiting for this to come on, and it reinforced for me, which is I'm just not an anime fan. Cowboy Bebop is fun. It's well done. I understand why people like it, but I would much rather have this live action version. I actually really like the.
Does it feel substantially different enough, Randy?
Yes. I mean, anime has a certain sensibility, and I feel like this doesn't quite have that.
There's like, all its tropes and things.
Yeah, and I think they do a better job of like tying the stories together. I cared about the characters more.
Cowboy Bebop the anime was very episodic.
Yeah,
there were deliberately so, and there were moments.
So I haven't finished watching, but I probably watched how many episodes is it?
There's 10.
I think I've watched like 6 of the 10 episodes. And they're episodic, but they have some connective tissue.
Yeah.
You see, I see a story arc for Jet Black, who's a bounty hunter who's like an ex-cop, is trying to do right by his kid.
But that's an introduction that was not in the anime.
Any wife or kid at all?
Nope.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Jet Black and Faye Valentine both get beefed up a lot, and Spike's story is definitely the thing they took the most of, but like Vicious and Julia are like mentioned but barely seen in the original movie. Like they didn't give them a story.
That's interesting.
Well, Vicious is prominent.
Well, but he's like as a background player.
Right.
He's like he's the boogeyman.
I've found that Vicious is a fun kind of character in this.
I like him.
He feels like a guy who is like a really dangerous, ruthless guy, but who's so desperately afraid of losing it all that he's like on the verge of cracking all the time. And he's in a constant rage.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a not a bad character.
No, I like it.
Obviously, they also have their cool anime looks translated to live action, and it's really funny a lot of the time.
Yeah.
There's like some hilarious shit.
John Cho is amazing.
John Cho does a great job playing Spike.
I love him bantering with Jet, especially.
Yeah.
And, oh man, the thing where Faye, like, steals their ship and is flying off and is, like, you can see her giving him the finger and she's, like, saying, fuck you fuckers.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
There's tons of Easter eggs. If you're looking for, and you know Cowboy Bebop, you'll see them. But that opening episode with the casino is great.
Yeah. There's a bit in there where, like, there's some dudes holding a casino heist, and it's like Spike just stumbles into it.
Yeah.
And then does this super cool roundhouse kick where he kicks a coin into the dude's face.
Yep.
And then he and Jet start taking down the bad guys, and then one of them comes out of the bathroom that he was in, and they're like, who goes to the bathroom in the middle of a heist? And this dude whips out this big old, like, super powerful, like, plasma gun or something, and, like, everybody in the room, including his own man, are like, dude, you cannot fire that.
What are you doing? You're in space. Don't
pick it up. Yeah. And they do a neat thing where I think this was a translation I know of a scene that was, like, in the anime, where the dude fires, blows a hole in it, and then you realize they are on a space station, not some planet-bound casino, because the vacuum starts pulling everything out, and you get a cool sequence out of that.
Yeah,
all these coins flying through the air and pelting them.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I got all the way to the end. I know some people really hated the twist ending. I didn't mind it at all because I don't care about the characters particularly.
I don't know what the twist would be, so don't say.
I won't.
I liked the twist, and I love the anime.
Yeah. And that's the thing, I've talked to plenty of people who like the anime and like the live action, so it's not everybody.
I feel like you shouldn't have to choose, but it's to me, the vibe I get is that they kind of did what the Marvel movies do with the comics, which is when they did like Infinity Gauntlet, man, they did not translate that story even close to exactly. They told their own story. It felt like it kept to the heart of it. Thanos was a clever villain who you might actually feel some empathy for at times. And like they got the heart of it. And I think, if anything, this is closer than the Marvel movies. But
and here's the thing. If adaptation... I mean, adaptation is always going to be revolve changes. And there's stuff in the MCU that I'm not crazy about.
Sure. We didn't love Hawkeye the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Yeah. I don't, like, Hawkeye having a family is a huge deal breaker for a lot of my friends. I love Hawkeye.
But you can't say they haven't done some good stuff.
But it's all been good. And so I'm like, yeah, you can make things work if you change them. And I think Cowboy Bebop mostly does.
Yep.
So.
I agree.
But, you know, if you feel differently, that's okay.
Don't send us an email, though, because we don't want our mellow harshed.
Yes, that's the thing. don't ruin everyone else's fun.
Yeah.
All right, I think that is all we have time for this week. And we'll wrap it up there. We'll be back, hopefully, next week, unless there's another flood or anything.
Oh, dear God, don't jinx
it. I dare it to.
I double dare it.
You can tell which one of us believes in omens and which one of us is
superstitious. I've double dared so much stuff that hasn't happened.
Yep.
It'd be funny if it didn't happen, but it won't. because flooding is a big wuss.
And on that note, until next time.
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.